Podcast Network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
All you need is love.
Sing it, Steph
C. All you need is love.
Do you?
All you need is love.
And a vacation for Phil.
All we need is me.
That's
love
right.
Love is all we need, and tickets to the World Cup.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, the sound of that is not the prisoner, but it is.
But it is.
But it denotes that it is the prisoner here at AfterBuzz TV, Throwback Thursday, to the 1967-1968 allegory that is the prisoner from the mind of Patrick McGoohan. This is the final episode, yeah. And it is indeed from the mind of Patrick McGoohan.
Yeah. Rattled or not, that was Patrick McGoohan's brainchild we just saw. And for those of you who are curious, we actually just all watched the episode together right before recording this.
Phil thought it was necessary to record my reaction.
Which will be posted later on various social medias for your enjoyment.
I don't know.
Wait, let's finish the opening and then we'll do your...
I feel a little deflated.
We'll talk about that. First off, we always open up with this. We open up with this. We'll try to not give spoilers, and that we'll talk about all the very... Guess what? This is spoiler-filled.
Yeah.
Everything's on the table. Everything's ready to be discussed. We've seen all the episodes. You should have seen all the episodes, so it's all fair game at this point. So, of course, we're talking about Fallout.
Whoop, whoop.
Steph Z. Kind of your overall reaction. It's very tough to go from that.
Again, I feel like, love you guys so much, but I feel like it was. I thought I was going to get my mind blown, and my mind was not blown because I think
you had a lot of WTF moments, though.
I had a lot of WTF moments of like what is happening in this episode. The reveal of him being number one was not shocking to me.
And I don't think it was actually shocking to many people. I think more people are kind of like WTF because of
how it was. Right. They were all, I feel like they all were like, okay, call time, 7 o'clock a.m. 7:05, we all drop 3 hits of acid. We start filming at 8:45. Like, that's when I feel like this happened. And I get that. That's the WTF. But it was, again, it was very clear that once, you know, he went in there, that all the half-faced people were parts of a personality.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes up who he was. It was very clear once he started talking and they started talking with him that that's what was happening.
Yeah.
So I thought that my mind was blown at the creativity, at the far-fetchedness of this particular episode, but my mind was not blown as the overall who is number one.
I was waiting for a sad trombone. I think that's a fair assessment. I think viewers at the time in 68, they were very divided. This is one of the most divisive episodes of television history. People either loved it or hated it. I think watching it, it's very interesting having someone, you know, watch it so many decades in the future, because I wonder if our cognitive ability to see through storylines has changed and updated, because I feel like you were pretty on the point about who number one was from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Yeah. The people that watched it back then, yes, there might have been water cooler discussion, but people did not spend it. First off, it was presented to them as a spy story. Second, mm-hmm. I'm sure they talked about it. They did not talk about it for an hour each week.
Like how we do.
Yeah. Right. And have like hundreds
and
of
take
books.
Notes. They just sat down and watched it. They weren't looking maybe as in-depth as I've been trained to look, because I know we're going to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
But
yeah, I mean, I think, and again, overall, like, no poo-poo on the show. Love The Prisoner. Yeah. Huge fan. I think everyone should watch this series or whatever you want to call it in their life. Like, I think it's great. It's entertaining. It causes you to think. It deals with so many out-of-the-box things, and it, you know, creates a platform for people to have discussions about stuff like this. But again, I just feel like I felt like what I wanted to happen was for me to have to, like, throw my pad in the air and be like, no way! Like, that's what I felt like I was built up was going to happen. And I was like, oh,
I think
he's number one. I literally wrote down when they were bringing him up, Amira, ? Like, yeah. Were they going to show him Amira? What were they going to show him? And as soon as it was him and the little dude in the mirror, I was very... like, okay, that's it. And then, so that was for me almost the reveal. And then the reveal again was when, you know, the mask came off and the weird monkey dude.
Well, I thought, what did you think about the very, very end?
Yeah,
the rocket leaving?
No.
Where they're at in life. Because that's I think, a bigger point of contention. It's not necessarily number one. That was weird in itself, but it's like, okay, I think, so what happened?
Yeah.
In as a whole, happened?
So the the last couple of minutes where everyone kind of resets and we see number two going back
dancing
into the
in front of the cop trying to tell him
going back into the office, and then number six getting in his car, and we see basically the intro all over again, as if it's repeating itself, as if he's never really free.
Oh, yeah. I feel like he's never really free because, again, he's number one. He's himself, so he's causing a lot of this. And we also see the door open for him, so that was a throwback to The Village, so to speak, so that he was in there.
Let's take a step back because we have a rare quote from McGoohan that I was able to pull about this episode, so I'll say
He actually spoke about it later on.
He did. So I want to pull that, but let's dig through the layers before
we fully get it.
But, yes, absolutely. This was shot right after Girl Who Was Death, which is why the rocket, you know, stuff was reused. Excuse me.
I thought the village was going to blow up, too.
Yeah.
And I feel like I would have liked that better than just some random rocket taking off.
Yeah, the rocket was like, oh, so you just sent them all to space? Okay.
Like, who's he? Like,
just those, the weirdos and the masks.
Again,
and,
it was like lunchtime. It was starting to get okay. And then it was like, oh, look at my call sheet. Drop another hit of acid. Then we continue to film.
There you go. Leo McKern, who obviously plays number two, the reason why he was shaved was because of the timing of Once Upon a Time to now. It was so different, and his face was different, so they just needed that gimmick. But yes, I think that came through the dropping of the acid type thing. Speaking of, here's the thing.
Go ahead. Go on. You had a question.
Something that I'm not sure... that I see in the notes, because you withheld the notes until right now.
Yeah.
Something that stood out to me a lot. Santa.
What? We can talk about that. Oh, we'll talk about him. With the judge. With the judge and Leo.
Well, the first time when you were just talking about when they were shaving number two, how they put the shaving cream on, I don't know if you guys remember, I said he looks like Santa.
Yeah.
And then... the judge clearly is in a Santa suit. He's not just in a red outfit. He's in a Santa suit.
So, because you had very early on, you had the notion of, you know, the Disney princesses and things like that. Where did we end up on that theory now that we had Santa Claus back in the picture? Like,
all bullshit.
Okay. Great. That's where we ended up with that.
All right. Okay. So, continuing.
Well, not that... not that the feelings of correlation that there's princesses are bullshit, but that princesses and fairy tales like that play out as bullshit. Santa is...
false.
I hope there's no kids watching. False. You know, like that we, as a society, feed into these concepts that someone decides to tell us as real, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
That more than...
I like that answer better than it's all just BS.
Yeah, well, I meant that that does mean it's BS, but that's a little bit more of a clarification of why, because it could mean BS in a few different ways. But that, again, played into a lot of, you know, society and government and the way that people want to brainwash us to think certain things. I feel like that, and there are, I mean, I know that a lot of people might not have said Snow White and this and that, but knowing what those things represent now, you know, looking back at it, it all kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And Magoon, speaking of, I know we're joking about the acid thing is a joke, by the way. But Magoon did say that he wrote this in a matter of 36 hours. And it,
wow.
Three hits of acid later.
I mean, whether or not that is true.
Or sleep deprivation. I mean, come on.
Yeah. I mean, I think he had a lot of time to think about the various things that he wanted to put in. But, mm-hmm. He took 36 hours just to do it in that way. Much to Steph's, we've talked about this in the past. Many audiences were a little bit disappointed when they saw it. They wanted, number one, to be kind of more of a James Bond type thing, not themselves.
Bam, dropping that existential bomb on audiences.
Yeah, they just didn't want it, man. They didn't. So much so that... That Magoon, he was in fear of his life because he thought he was going to be lynched.
He like went into hiding for
what?
Several months.
He was definitely dropping the acid then. You don't go into hiding because you made a TV
people
show.
Were upset at the time. People were legitimately upset about that.
Like, I'm upset. I'm definitely upset, but those people are crazy too.
Anonymous level upset.
Here's the thing. I mean, first off, he's inspired revolt, right? I mean, he just angered people with like how many like gunshots.
I feel like he left me hanging.
And that's what people felt. Yeah. People felt that, and they were angry. They were angry.
They wanted completion. Yeah. They didn't want to be free thinkers.
Yeah, they wanted to be spoon fed, which is Magoon. What he did not want to do
exactly.
Spoon feed them.
Spoon speed.
You know, my question is every other time. What I didn't see, like, we recognize that number one's on the door, and it has been, but every other time that they've shown that place, has the door opened by itself?
No.
Okay. Every so often.
Oh, really?
Sometimes it has. Not in the original kind of opening
sequence.
That's something
that's interesting that...
Oh, wait, I think
like we would have picked up on it.
We're talking about his house.
His actual number one
place.
Wait, didn't we see the door open when he went back and the woman was living?
Yes.
Yeah, the door opened by itself then.
Yeah. So we've seen it every now and then. But yes, it's always been one Buckingham Place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think I made note of that very early on to check the number. And so now you understand why.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the overview of all of the stuff. So
wait, no, time out. Overview. You have a note here that says Magoon didn't know who number one was until writing the last episode.
That's what he claims.
I don't know about that.
That's what he claims. I mean,
could it have been that it made sense? I mean, yeah.
A computer, maybe it was always going to be a computer, and then he decided that there was really a man
behind it.
Well,
but as soon as they were saying he was the Man of Steel, again, there was so many breadcrumbs that they gave. Like, if you didn't know that he was number one going into this episode...
It was being hit over your head.
It was like, I'm number one, I'm number one, I'm number one, don't miss it. Which to me, was way too much. Like, when they said he's the Man of Steel... It's like, and number one is that steel thing with an eye. Like, come on.
Which, by the way, Man of Steel also can be
Superman.
Stalin.
Yes.
Well, yeah,
at the time, it was more referencing of Stalin.
Yeah, probably you're right. But again, the superhero blue chair that he sits in.
No, the throne. It's a throne.
No, but it just happened to be superhero blue.
I got it. Hey,
there was like stuff hanging down from the. Shit, that could have been.
I think it was supposed to be more like purpley blue, and it was supposed to be the color of royalty. But
no, here's the thing. I mean, obviously,
I'm pretty sure over there they know the color of royalty. It was superhero blue.
I mean, again, it toes that line of it can be one or it can be the other, and what is that distinction? That's the whole. We'll talk about that more when we talk about number two and number 48 versus number six. But it's all these various things, and yes, I think although you wouldn't have thought of Stalin, Stalin was thought of very much as the Man of Steel.
Yeah, he's the OG.
Well, I think that's one of the. I think that's a big timeline thing. If we were watching it back then, I probably would have thought of that. But now, because Superman's so
having made superhero shirts,
having a Kryptonian tattoo on my arm, I kind of just go to Superman.
Yeah.
I get that. I get that.
What does it say, by the way?
It's Kryptonian. It reads the word trust. T-R-U-S-T. Because I feel like trust is the ultimate superpower.
We're looking at Steph Z's tattoo, ladies and gentlemen.
Snap!
I don't know if you can see it.
So,
no, I'm just kidding.
How about this? So, we open up basically, he gets a suit, right? And he, you know, he says, we felt you'd be more comfortable as yourself.
Yeah. On that creepy, like, not even mannequin. It was like a what do you call that? A paper mache. Yeah, it looked like a Frankenstein.
But it looked exactly like him.
Yeah, it did.
It was him.
It was a Frankenstein.
Which again was like your number one. You're going to see yourself put on your clothes because that's what you're going to see. Weird.
Yeah, super weird.
Weird one.
I mean, to the point of number one, I guess let's talk about number one, and then we'll kind of go back a little bit. I mean, whether or not he knew that number one was going to be himself, it was like the Schrodinger's cat, right? You don't know until you put it to paper, and it's like, okay, well, all things point to this way, and let's do it. I mean, there's been a lot of, like, Breaking Bad, right? Vince Gilligan has noted most notably, like, they didn't really know where it was going. They kept writing themselves in a hole and being like, how the hell did we get out of it?
That's true.
And so in this regard, it's like, okay, well, if we look at the track record, all signs point to him being number one for the most part. So let's do that.
That works. I can buy that.
Steph?
I can buy it, but I might return it because I feel like... I get what you're saying, but in the same sense, I feel like so many things were done so smart in this show to not have any direction, because who else really could number one have been that would have made sense as much as him being number one throughout the series?
You also have to remember, though, at this point, McGoohan was like, I didn't want to do these extra episodes. So I think there's a little bit of a thumb in the eye, spit in the face. With these last set,
And you know what I thought was going to happen? I thought, and this would have made me happy, when number two spit in his eye, and then there was a close-up of McGoohan's face, I thought under his eye was going to be wet. I was waiting for that.
That would have been good.
I was waiting for it.
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to do... this is a very tough experiment for us, and Steph Z at this point, but to see the original, just the seven. Just the intended sevens, to see if you can come up with the same conclusion. Very tough to do for us, but, and obviously you listening right now, because I imagine you've seen all the episodes now.
Right.
But try it out with somebody who hasn't seen the show and just haven't watched
seven. Just see where they end up,
Oh, excuse me.
I know.
We all did it at the same time. Something got us in the studio.
So, let's talk about... You know, if we're going to talk about number one, let's dive into number one fully.
Let's do it.
And there's we have a couple of pictures of number one. There's the overall picture that we can see, and then the picture we're looking at right now is obviously what the final reveal is. But even kind of before that, we get the crystal ball, the all-seeing ball that sees into everything, and it's it breaks the fourth wall.
Yeah, it does, and it just reflects McGoohan.
Yeah, because it's him multiple times of the prison, you know, his face, the prison, his face, the prison. And then he breaks it. Interestingly enough, he's kind of wearing like a turtleneck, much like a lot of the number twos.
Mm-hmm.
Who is McGoohan?
Number six.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Because we have to differentiate between number one and number six for a little bit, even though they're the same.
They're one and the same, yeah.
But yeah, he is wearing a blackish gray.
One of them is batshit crazy, running around. I mean, really? Was there a question?
So we get the ape reveal, right? So we get the ape reveal, which to me represented a primitive nature to all of humanity. We come from apes, and by being in the caverns, we're kind of in a subconscious level of everything. And in many ways, you know, this number one could be the negative aspect of number six that he's got to destroy. You know, everyone's got a bad side to them.
But that's exactly kind of, not exactly, but that's a lot of, I think, what I have been thinking.
Yeah.
That it's all kind of going on in his head, and it's these things that he's forced to face that maybe have happened or maybe haven't happened, and choices, maybe good, maybe bad, that he's made. So I definitely am on board with that.
I mean, it's the killing of the id is what it is. It's, you know, if you want to look at it in psychological terms.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, ironically, David Tomlin, who's the producer, he wrote, it's about a man destroying himself through ego.
Yeah.
Is that symbolic of McGoohan or not?
I mean, it's, and when you think about it, when you put it in relation to Danger Man and how much he was just trying to, like, step away from that role and that notion, that typecasting. And he wanted to put it to rest.
But it's funny because if you think about how much it does relate to him, not an ego and everything, it takes a certain individual to think that their show is that important that people might kill them.
I think when we say ego, we don't mean like egotistical, but ego as the self.
Right, but yeah. I feel like it all kind of ties into each other.
Yeah.
Well, ego, I mean, but that's where ego as not the self stems from is the fact that, you know, that I mean, I want to talk about the orbits, right? Because, you know, there's the three orbits. There's orbit 42 or 48, orbit number two. And then there's supposed to be one for him, but he doesn't take it. Mm-hmm. And you know, everywhere he goes, there's
48 plus 2 equals 50, and 5 zeros are 5 senses. Go ahead.
I have no idea what that means.
I guess a person. It makes up all the person.
Okay.
All your senses.
Sight, smell, touch, 5 senses. Taste, hearing.
Got it. Okay.
Just trying to make it work.
Very good.
Shoehorn it in there, Steph.
It's the last episode. I got to do some math.
Where the hell was I? The orbits, right? So literally everything revolves around number six. And so that is, you know, so in terms of being an, how do you become an individual without being egotistical?
Well, and that's something I thought was hilarious. And I'm going to backtrack and take away from that real quick and then jump back in. Was when they all were like, you're going to reign over us. We need you to guide us. You're the ultimate individual. Teach us how to be individuals. And that's, again, they still don't get the message. It's still like, here, we need someone to tell us how to do it. And that with the orbits, it just kind of reinforces that they don't want to be individuals.
Yeah.
See, I see that totally different. I see like all of that is parts of him. So they couldn't be individuals because they're all parts of him that are internally kind of battling. So he has to be able to be the individual and just go with it.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely. What's your thoughts?
Like you've actually been really reserved about not sharing your thoughts. This is the episode you need to own it.
I think. You know, I think you're both right in that sense. But for me, what the rest of the people, the judge and whatever the Greek theater masks represent, is perhaps another individual trying to be an individual, but they literally just don't listen. When he takes the stand and he starts speaking, they're like, I. You're not even listening.
And you interpret that.
Oh, yeah, I interpreted that as totally different. When he was finally speaking to the people, it was all the pieces of it that the theater people were all pieces of him that needed to fire at the same time in order for him to speak.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So I took and I read it as their masks being black and white. It's kind of like the yin and yang trying to find the balance in each little area.
Yes. Yeah, so the seesaw orbit, you know, no longer do they have cameras. Now they have guns with them.
Machine guns.
But here's the thing. It's going perfectly. It's no longer seesawing because we're in a state of equilibrium. Right. Speaking of that, there's a photo we have of the Greek theater masks. And I want to play a fun game with you guys real fast and as well as our individual audience members at home. How many of these can you name? And I'll start. We see the one who speaks most is the anarchist.
Yeah.
So there's one.
Yeah. There's education.
Correct.
Assertion.
Yeah. I remember them.
Assertion.
Therapy.
Therapy. Assertion.
Youth.
Intelligence.
Nationalists. Pacifists.
I'm sure you know activists. All of them, Phil.
Activists.
Yeah.
I'm blanking.
Oh, the supervisor, he becomes identification. Right.
Whoa, Santa?
No. The supervisor.
The one who
walks in through the jukebox setting.
The guy that I was like, he would play a good Nazi in another series.
All right.
That's right. So,
do you have a list of all of them?
I don't actually.
No.
That's why it's a fun game to play because you know you try to.
What do you remember seeing?
Intelligence.
Yeah. There's got to be some sort of forum where we could find all that.
Oh yeah, or just screen.
But yeah, and again, when you see that, that's pretty much. Your thoughts, like those with those people, for me, they're your thoughts are what makes up who you are, your brain, your experiences, whatever.
This might be whatever you call it, a myth, a set myth. But apparently someone in the back wrote their name on their little plaque, and McGoon was not happy, to say the least. He's like, what the heck is this?
Wow.
The good news is, I'm sure no one saw it, if it does.
If it does exist, yeah.
Yeah.
I wish we had like a psychologist friend to bring on the show, because I really want a psychologist to break down this particular episode.
Acid is what they would say. I'm just kidding.
Acid, yeah.
I mean, LSD.
I mean, part of it, right, a couple of things that I...
Which would have been awesome if the song, instead of All You Need Is Love, was Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Oh my God.
Beatles. That was, here's the, right, part of why I think they chose... All You Need Is Love, besides the obvious lyrical reasons, was that it's a reference to pop culture, and it was the number one song at around the time, and so it's a pun on number one. We're going to meet number one.
And, I mean, you know, the whole overall individual, like, really to be an individual, you need to love and love yourself.
Yeah, and one of, you know...
getting deep there. Corny.
There's nothing you can say... But you can learn to play the game, which that's all he's been doing in the village.
Yeah,
is playing the game.
Yep. Up until the end.
Nothing you can say that can't be said. There's nothing you can do that hadn't been done. Yeah.
Yeah. See,
it's perfect.
Yeah, it's good. It's a
good tie-in.
Or Lucy in the Sky.
But I just can't see. I can't see Lucy in the Sky for the fight action sequence.
Yeah, All You Need Is Love with McGoohan and a machine gun.
Tommy gun, which we'll talk about.
Like, no guns, no drinking. What, it all went to hell in the last episode.
To the Wild Wild West, yeah. It went all to
I will hell. Say there was no women in this episode, which was super weird.
Yeah, there were women that were leaving the village.
Oh, but you know what I mean. None of them played.
You said none.
Yeah, okay.
Not literally. Metaphorically.
Yeah. No, there was no leading women.
Yeah, no leading ladies.
I liked how the mechanical... the cylinder, you know, we've seen it in the past. Yes, of course.
I was trying to be like, is there Morse code going on?
Aww. Well, that's the thing, yeah, because, you know, I mean, we've had Pavlovian-type responses throughout this whole series, and so it's very much reminiscent of that. And, you know, do you guys think that number six is able to interpret these, or because he's not Pavlovian, he's not susceptible to these responses? That
well, but isn't it him blinking? Like, really, if number one is him, isn't it all somehow connected? So why would he be reading his own
thoughts? Do you understand all the thoughts in your head all the time?
No, but you don't... If you don't understand the thoughts in your head, I don't think you know that you're having them. Therefore, you wouldn't know to try and figure them out. Not a psychologist, but that is just how it would occur to me.
Okay.
No, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, no, you don't know how to interpret all the thoughts in your head. So, I mean, I don't know. I think... He didn't respond to it because, as it's been established, he's the man of steel. He doesn't respond to anything, but I think it was his subconscious influencing.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of subconscious, my subconscious is telling our fans and me that we do have to thank one of our sponsors for supporting this show, for keeping the show free to you guys, because without it, you know, we, like The Prisoner, have production costs. And we don't incur them on you, we incur them on us. And one of the great ways you can support the show and keep making it, keep it free, is support our sponsors. So this sponsor is Mazda, and they have a very important question for you. Does driving matter to you? It did to McGoohan, as he's driving in his car all over England. There's over 4 million miles of road in the U.S., to find out if driving matters to you. That's a lot of ground to cover. A lot of highways, freeways, wrong ways, long ways. They're all there waiting to be driven on. So, do you take that left turn at Albuquerque or just keep going? Do you wake up early on a Sunday morning for a drive before traffic? Or do you take the long, winding road home for a change? If driving matters to you, just get out there and drive. Why? As the prisoner would ask. Because driving matters. Thank you, Mazda.
Why?
Because driving matters. There you go. That's the ultimate answer. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see where we kind of bounced all over the place.
I know.
Yeah,
I'm
sorry. It's hard. It's hard.
Let's start with let's go to number 42 and 48. Let's start with 48. Why don't we start there?
So Dumb bones. Everything is connected. I mean, that's really.
Marissa, play that. I picked the version of Dem Bones. We have a photo of Alexis
Creeper.
Connor, who was the kid, right? I told you to keep an eye out for him because he's coming back.
And then four back, and right? eight. A four is doubled to be an eight, so there's one and then two.
Here we go. Sing along. Ezekiel cried now.
Dry bones. Wait, this is a Bible song?
Yes, it is.
I'm a wild atheist. I don't know these things.
Here's the thing. It was also...
Neither of you are singing.
The thigh bones connected to the hip bones. You gotta dance like him.
What does this have to do about the Bible? I don't understand.
There's another song that's not a biblical hit song.
Part of it.
I'm so confused.
I'm so confused why they would use this one.
Well, because Ezekiel 37, verse 1. I don't know how to read these things. 1 through 14 refers to uniting Israel as one society. That's what we're doing in this
when
episode.
When was this song written?
Chapter 37, verses 1 through 14.
Thank you, Marissa.
Marissa is the token religious.
Yay, somebody's got to have the Lord in them here, because it's certainly not us.
Wow.
Here's the thing. I mean,
I just don't. And they chose the Ezekiel verse to use in this one. Okay, because the audio in that theater.
What does Ezekiel mean? Because that's also
Ezekiel's a person.
Ezekiel's the one who wrote it.
I know, but what?
Do we have to get that basic with the Bible?
Well, no, but I'm saying no. I get that he wasn't wrote it, but I know that there's like a big brand that's called Ezekiel too.
The bread.
God strengthens.
See, I knew there was a meaning. God
strengthens. But there is a bread called Ezekiel.
I wasn't thinking of the bread.
I'm just saying.
Well, and it's like eating a piece of God. It's like taking communion. That's really cute.
It is.
Wow, yeah. Everything is so super tied together. It's a small world after all.
Why didn't they use that?
They should have.
Well, part of Dem Bones, right? And it's D-E-M. It used to be a slave song that they would sing, and it was like the only way to be free was to go to heaven. And so by, you know, singing these religious songs, it gave them safe passage to heaven and so on and so forth.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think ultimately it was chosen for those various things, because obviously the villagers are ultimately slaves. And how do you become free and so on and so forth. And
I like it, Phil. I like
it. Yeah, that works really good, actually.
I'll buy that one. Won't return it.
There you go. And, I really like the fact, you know, it became number 48 as close as we come to any sort of religion. I mean, when, you know, he's being accused that the youth has no purpose in the regard of their rebellions. It's just, you know, there's no sense of direction.
Listless youth.
I thought number 48 at one point was McGowan seeing himself as a youth.
Oh, yeah. No.
Because they kind of look somewhat similar, I thought.
And they both called the judge dad.
Yeah.
Yes. I think it's there.
I don't think you're off basis. I don't think it's meant to be as in your face with other aspects of this, but I think both 48 and 2's rebellions are tied into number 6's.
Well, and they leave together.
Yeah.
Brothers from another mother?
It's almost like the different faces
of rebellion.
Yeah, you've got youth, you've got establishment, and then you've got...
But he was the only one in the whole series, maybe, to me, that resembles him. Mm. And he comes back.
Yeah.
Well, number two, we'll talk about number two. He comes back in his own way.
Right, but number twos have come back before. No, like, sidekick has come back as the sidekick again.
Was he... I'm not remembering. Was he 48 in the... No.
I think he might have had a different.
Yeah,
number.
He was. I think he's the same actor in a different role.
Regardless.
So he's not the crazy one that kills the lady at the end.
No. Okay. But regardless, he has a refusal to wear his number six or like number six. Mm-hmm. He refuses to wear the number.
Yeah. Again, why he would be McGowan.
Yeah.
There you go. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole point is right. Once upon a time, we spent talking about how number two becomes number six and six becomes number two, ultimately, right? And so if you want a full dissection of them merging together, you're there. I 100% agree with number 48 that they're supposed to be similar.
Yeah.
And And much like number six, this whole entire series, when he lays down on his knees and is in that pose, he's basically saying, you're wrongly accusing me. Like, you know, it's supposed to be like Jesus being crucified.
Yeah.
Wrongfully.
Oh, wow. There's a lot of religiousness
in this episode, yeah.
For as much as McGowan has, like, gone against violence and all these
things. Yeah, it seems weird. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It just seems left field. Yeah. Dropping that acid again.
Yeah.
he's on that molly.
Well, that's, you know, speaking of, like, did you guys find it interesting that it's the anarchist who speaks up against number 48 and says, you know, you've gone against society, basically? It's like, well, isn't that funny coming from the anarchist? And that's the whole point, is that it is a contradiction of everything.
Yeah.
You know, and that there are so, we contradict ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, anytime you take a stance against something so strongly, you become vulnerable because you're going to contradict yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And people do it every single day.
Like in our previous show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why I love when people say, I'm never late. Oh, yeah? All it's going to take is one time for you to be late.
Never and always are like the two bad misused words.
Yeah.
There are curses in my book. Not cusses. Curses.
And, you know, so what did you guys think? I have my opinions on it, but the Them Bones dance and everyone's breaking into it, because we had it once at the beginning, kind of people were getting into it, but then it was stopped, and then eventually just everyone got into it.
It shows that none of them are individuals. Like, I think that it's a underlying, what do you call that? You know, it's a hint of what's to come when they ultimately are say, like, hey, we want you to rule over us, be our leader, teach us to be individuals. I think it's highlighting the fact that none of them are actually individuals.
Steph?
I don't think they really exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but even if it's in his head, what does that mean?
If it's in his head, that... I don't know. I feel like it's not... They don't really exist in a sense where they ask. They're not individuals. It's just all of him coming together to realize that he has more power because he's number one.
Okay. How about this? Is it the negative effects of rock and roll? Some people like cite that of like, oh,
is what? Sorry, I didn't hear you.
You know how like rock and roll, it was all meant to like you just lose your mind and you go crazy and you
it's
just like
it's like the Mary Jane.
Yeah.
Steph, it's like the Mary Jane.
Which, by the way, please go see Reefer Madness, the musical. It's amazing.
Marissa agrees.
Where did this show go? No. I'm kidding.
I did not take that away, but again, that's the 60s. This is the 20-teens. So.
Didn't see it at all. And I don't think the music that they're playing here is rock and roll.
I will say 48 has a really punk, like pre-punk vibe.
Steampunk.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's not... But like, you know, you think about like the era of punks. And while there were like British punk gangs actually in the 60s, there's a really cool girl gang. But the punk movement, you don't really relate to like the later 70s and 80s. Yeah, early 70s. But he definitely has this like... It's not quite like rock and roll rebellion. It is like a British pre-punk, and I really appreciated that. Like, they're definitely like, I don't know, that just made me happy because I like that. But so I can see why people were drawing the music conclusion, but what an interesting song to pick.
I actually love this song because it's like, again, it connects everything together. Yes, Meredith. Oh,
wow. Is it because religion turns people into sheep and that they all followed him? Is that what McGowan was saying?
It depends on your worldview and so on and so forth. So maybe, according to you, yes.
I wasn't saying according to me. I was asking. I was asking.
Well, you said earlier that you were an atheist, so.
That doesn't mean I disapprove of religion. I just don't believe in God, but I think religion has a great place in society.
I think, part of it, speaking of that whole thing, you know, for me, the whole representation of these various entities and kind of them... whether or not disagreeing or mm-hmm. at least agreeing finally in this sense, it's like, okay, how are you going to argue when at the end of the day, everyone just wants the same enlightenment? So that's what I got out of it, was like, stop fighting. You know, and by the way, he wanted very much to have this kind of look like a UN session.
And that, I mean, it felt like Parliament, that's for certain.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's just like what both of you guys are saying, it's, you know, maybe there is no God, but in a way, you're your own God. You set your own rules. You do this, you do that.
Definitely.
You know?
You're very Nietzsche-esque today, Steph C.
What do you mean?
Nietzsche?
Nietzsche. Okay. Yeah, quoted as saying, God is dead.
No, I didn't. I said that?
No, I said, no, Nietzsche said. Is quoted as saying God is dead.
Oh! Didn't know that. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, yeah. And I'm not saying that that's my belief necessarily, but what I'm saying is you two are kind of saying the same exact thing, but slightly differently.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Speaking of kind of the whole idea of Parliament, I pulled a quote from Salman Rushdie. The idea of the sacred is quite simply one of the most conservative notions in any culture because it seeks to turn other ideas, uncertainty, progress, change, into crimes. And that's, in many ways, what I felt the whole the proceedings were.
Well, the word, it's just, because that word is so vague, really. Because it can mean something different to everyone.
Rebellion?
Mm-hmm. Well, no. Crime. It is sacred.
Oh.
Sacred to you is maybe not sacred to me, therefore that can't...
But that's what it's saying, is that what is sacred is dependent on the individual or the society, and that if it falls outside of that realm, then... It's labeled as, an act of aggression or something to be punished.
Right, which kind of makes the word null and void to me.
Well, in the prison, right, everybody that was there, with the exception of 48, 2, and 6, agreed on what society needs to be doing. So I want to get into number 2 now because he says, he followed the rules and things like that. Like, it's almost a very sad story because he followed the rules his entire life and he represents, someone older. They could have had him obviously much, much older and it would have been even sadder if he was like in his 90s. But, now he's, let's say, towards the end of his life, even though he still has a little bit more, and he's regretting.
He's got 2 weeks.
Regretting the fact that he's been the way he has been because he's realized, like, it's all meant nothing. I've given my life to you guys and it's all meant nothing. Mm-hmm. And so now when I do rebel, it's going to be the most short-lived thing. But at the very least, I can take that away because it's going to be the most beautiful.
Wow, that's really...
Did you not...
That's really deep there.
No, I just still think that number 2... Maybe I've been watching Mr. Robot a little too much, but I kind of all think that it's the bigger picture of the inner workings of his head. So maybe he's been doing that, and he's kind of the same age almost as I feel like Magoon would be. They've never, you know what I mean? So I feel like it's just, I didn't read it that way.
He's got like 20 years on.
But then why can't it be the fear of that?
Yeah.
Fear of that, but anyway you slice it, that character... It's like if number 1's in charge, so if this is really just Magoon's head and it happening always, he's telling number 2 what to tell him in order to get through whatever issue he needs to get through. So he really has a way bigger role than a failure type role.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just different.
Yeah.
I just read it differently.
Yeah.
Let's see. One of the things, we talked about this, and I want to kind of present you guys, because Meredith, you said, how do you allow people to be individuals when you have to teach them?
Mm-hmm.
I thought of immediately Plato and the allegory of the cave, only because, the only reason you would turn back to the cave, and this was literally a cave.
Yeah, quite.
Is to educate people.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you teach? Can you teach someone to be an individual, to be themselves?
Yeah.
I don't know if it can be taught as much as it can be learned.
Okay.
If that...
I get what you're trying to say. Yeah. It's not like you can sit somebody down and tell them, but it has to be... You can create a space for them to figure it out.
Exactly.
And then direct and redirect and direct and redirect. And I feel like that's what
sounds very Pavlovian, though.
Whatever it sounds, but I feel like that's what a good parent does. I feel like you can't sit... I can't sit you down, Phil, and be like, okay, if you do X, Y, and Z, you're an individual. But I can, by whatever you choose to do, or knowing you, and knowing maybe there's, like, something you won't do because an insecurity here, or this, that, or their thing, I can coach you through that by seeing the way you experience life and the things you choose to help.
Almost like the village did with number 6.
Right.
So the village is therapeutic.
Yeah. So therapy for you in this case would be coming to Vancouver. I'm just kidding. All roads back to Vancouver.
Oh, man. Yes, indeed. You just took me off the train of thought there.
Sorry, I've been doing that all episode. I've been trying.
Guys, tweet at Phil and tell him to go to Vancouver for the World Cup this weekend, please.
Yeah, if you guys are watching, I'm trying to convince Phil I want to go see the women's USA soccer team win the World Cup. I'm just putting it out there that they're going to win. It's a redemption. We're going to do it again. It's very sad the English team.
We very quickly timestamped this episode.
I did.
Meredith, you have incorrectly called the guns towards the end machine guns.
Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, I called
them machine guns. Yeah. It was me.
I was going to call them, what's the Russian?
AK-47?
I was going to find the Russian name, but yes, AK-47s.
Well, they are not. They're Tommy guns.
What?
Wow.
Which are the same.
No! Tommy guns are 1940s. They got the little round thing. Little boop, boop,
the
boop,
one guy
gangsters.
Did have that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I missed that.
I saw it, yeah.
And it was the same guns used by gangsters and law enforcers during the Prohibition era. A knock on the U.S., perhaps. And again, contrary, because you got law enforcers and you got
it's
gangsters.
It's like you're telling me they went through the research and thought process to figure out what kind of gun would be a knock on U.S. prohibition, but they didn't know number one was going to be number one until the end of the freaking series. Come on!
Wow, that New Jersey just got
I don't buy it. It's New York. Get it right.
Sorry.
I'm just telling you what.
I'm just saying, I don't buy it. Returned. I don't buy it.
I mean,
there's a great movie called Heavyweights, and one of the kids in it says, "Hey, man, I'm just telling you what I heard."
I mean, I love you for it, but come on.
Well, I mean, this isn't the first time that they've kind of thumbed their nose at America, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Speaking of which, what do you guys think of the whole, just because I know we talked about The Rock and things like that, but how much of a knock is it on just the nuclear threat and things like that? Because now this is the second time we've had it referenced.
I definitely did think of an explosion, but I didn't make that correlation. I think at that time I was just very like, Phil just filmed me, and I didn't have an aha moment.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the rocket actually came out of nowhere. It really did. Let's like.
As did all the helicopters.
Yeah. Like that. Wow, where are all those helicopters before? I felt the rocket, and that's an issue I've always had with this episode, is that. I don't understand why the rocket was used other than we have this footage, so let's reuse it. Mm-hmm. Like, it felt very forced, and I don't actually draw meaning from it because I just don't feel it.
I think it ties back to Dr. Strangelove, and there's a clip. It's from the trailer, and I think it's... By the way, watch the trailer in its entirety because talk about, like, if you think that McGoohan is strange enough, this is one of the best trailers in the world just because of how weird it is. But I want to play the part where they say the title of the movie. So, Marissa, hit it.
Dr. Strangelove.
Or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and...
Love the Bomb.
A moving picture.
But again, that is really the world we live in. It's like, what can we do to distract you over here? Why, this is really what you should be thinking.
Interesting.
Mm.
So we shouldn't be thinking about rockets, although rockets are aiming for us as we speak.
Well, but that rocket, there was no... Like, why did everyone have to flee the village?
Where was it going?
Well, you don't know.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, I mean, how many times, like, people thought legitimately that if they hid under a table that they would be safe from a nuclear bomb. Not the case. And so it's like, you know, you had procedures for these things because you didn't know what was going to happen.
I didn't feel that they
were. Do you follow the procedures if you don't know? And again, I'm going to timestamp this in a second, this episode. But do you think that you follow, both of you, I have this question. Do you think that you follow... That, like, if something they say is going to happen.
That's the thing, is I didn't get the impression that they were running to hide. I thought that they were running out of the village because they thought it was going to blow up. Because, generally speaking, if a rocket launches, it's not going to, unless, you know, because it fails, it's not going to just fall down and blow up where it came from. It's going to go launch somewhere and go launch an attack somewhere else. So I don't understand why they were,
This was at the cusp. I mean, this, you know, we were about to send the first man on the moon, right? Right. And so part of that ties into literally this time period of 1968.
It was just such a forced scene.
It was, but at the same time, terrible. Again, but I think the point of it was that mm-hmm. that if you may, they've never gone through this, so how the hell do you know the consequences? All you know that you've been conditioned, like, wow. If you know how many times, like the stereotype, if you hit this red button, things will go bad. Well, what's going to happen? Just don't press the red button.
Yeah.
So, like in this scenario, they've literally pressed the red button. It's like, oh crap!
But does it start a new scene, or does the red button just? I'm not going to finish that sentence because it. I don't want to take away from your notes because I just looked down and saw that it was going to.
What? No, go ahead.
Okay, then, or does the red button just reset everything all over again?
Maybe it does.
So to
marinate, you know, because mm-hmm. I think we've talked number one, and I'm glad we did. But now I really think people take most issue with the actual ending, and that's what we're hinting
at. So that's why I love. I'm one of the rare people who absolutely adores the ending.
Really?
Okay. For what? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, because it's one of those masochistic things where it shows that. You know, it's like a hamster in a wheel. You keep trying to think you're going to go somewhere, but you never end up going anywhere. You just end up at the same place again. And I think for what this show is at its core, it's about futility. I think that's what it shows. It's that there's no real running away. You know, you can't escape fate, destiny, yourself, and you always end up back where you belong.
Steph, go ahead, because I got some thoughts.
That's why you need to love yourself, because you can't escape yourself.
Mm.
Okay. I have, for me, and forgive me if I said this, but again, a lot of these themes kind of, as we've right. said, have yeah. kind of gone throughout, but it comes down to the fact that in life, if you're not ready to learn a certain lesson, life's going to give you that same hurdle to go mm-hmm. through over and over and over. And so in this regard, I think the prisoner, as much as like, yes, he's won the right to be an individual, I think he's making, you know, he's still a prisoner of himself. And until he learns how to forego that, he's going down the same hamster wheel, yep. as you said. And I think, and it also speaks to a greater thing. I think ultimately, you know, and this I know I've said before, but, everyday choices, right? Everyone like theorizes about like what they can do in life and things like that. It's literally the everyday grind that can have a life or death consequence on people because it wears mm-hmm. you down.
Or McGowan just needs to accept the fact he's Danger Man and then move on with his life
and do some more acid.
No, I agree. I think like that's like I said, I like it because of my weird nihilistic, you know, tendencies, but. It is. I mean, it's exactly what you say, Phil, is the reason that he's going through it all again is ultimately he didn't learn anything from this. He didn't change at all. He's right. never changed the entire episode.
Yeah.
Serious. And excuse me.
That's again, and I believe I also said this very early in the thing, that he is a prisoner of himself.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I feel like when we talk about all this stuff, like Phil said, you really do have a choice of learning and educating and figure out why you think and believe the things you do, or just going along with what society and people direct you to do. And again, I feel, you know, that it is just that internal prisoner. Yeah. You're a prisoner mm-hmm. of what other people think. You're a prisoner of what other, the rules and the regulations that are set for you. Like, you're a prisoner of all these things. And, you know, that's really it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and for me at least, and if you guys disagree, I'm fine. If you like punk rock, if you like this, if you like that, it's okay. But know and understand why you like it rather than like, oh, I just like it. Right? How many times do you hear people say, I don't know, I just like it?
Oh, I mean, not even with music. With that's
everything,
like,
yeah.
Oh, I didn't anything. Mean just music.
Oh, mac and cheese. I just love it. I can't explain why. I just love mac and cheese. I mean, it's cheesy and right. delicious and really good.
No, but I feel like stuff like that comes down to taste, and I don't know that there is, like, and again, I don't mean to go super deep, but I feel like with music and with food, you like it because it makes you feel a certain way, or your taste buds react a certain way. But I more so have that when people say, you know, I work on this project on the side, and, you know, I interview people, and one of the questions I like to ask them are, you proud to be American? And they don't know why. Like, for me, that's like a greater scale. Like, people... Most of the people, I've had one person that said no, say yes, and I say, well, why? And they have no idea. So it's like a belief. For me, like, things that you're attracted to or things that you like, not knowing why is simpler than having beliefs and stance. And, you know, it'd be like if I was to ask Meredith, why are you an atheist? If you're like, well, I don't know. That would be more upsetting than not knowing why you don't like mac and cheese.
I get that, right? And I'm going to agree with you, but also, you know, say that, the greater thing is, you know, by not even knowing the simpler things, you can't even get to that level. How are you going to know why you're an atheist if, I'll give you an example.
But you can't really know why you like mac and cheese. No, it just works with your taste buds.
I'm going to give you an example.
Okay, put that
just,
finger
just
away.
Listen. Just put listen.
Put it away. Put
just
your finger down. Now, shut up.
I was just making a crack about mac and cheese. I didn't realize it would turn into this. Wow. Okay.
It's all your fault.
No, I just wanted mac and cheese.
So, I know. I totally want mac and cheese now.
So
yes, Phil.
There's a mom who make baked ham, right? And she would cut off the crust and she would put it in the pan. And then the kid would be like, well, why did you cut off the crust? Or the whatever. Mm-hmm. And because my mother did it that way. And so the daughter asked the
grandmother. Oh, my God. I've totally heard this.
Asked the grandmother, you know, why did you cut, you know, why did you, well, because my mother did it that way. So then the daughter asked the great grandmother of like, why did you do this way? Well, back in the day when we baked this ham, the pans were so small that we had to cut the crust. And so no one questions this crap, and that's the way you do it. And you just think that's
which
just
again
the way.
Is society though.
Yeah, which again is for me more of a thought thing than just an initial like why we're attracted to certain things, why we like certain things, I feel like is more of a reaction than a thought process.
Yeah, I think it's actually demeaning and kind of insulting to assume that people like, oh, I don't know why I like the song I just do, is that they're like to insinuate that they're just following popular culture. I think things like music and entertainment resonate with us on such a deep level that maybe we can't always quantify with words versus, well, I mean, I just cut the crust off my ham. I think it's apples and oranges.
But yeah, I think for me, as we're talking about it, one of the things that probably have been brought up so many different times in society is, you know, the youth, right? The innocence of youth. And
or the ignorance of youth.
Yeah, but there's
or the brilliance of youth that we don't explore.
There's a curious, here's the thing, they may not be knowledgeable, but there is that curiosity there, and I feel like you know, with number 48, you know, it's represented here, is that, you know, he's doing things in life, and just because he's exploring on his own, yes, he needs direction and things like that. But he shouldn't, as the judge says, have his buttocks smacked. You know, that shouldn't be right away what the go to is. Yeah, as Steph C said, you know, guide them, give them a playground to grow.
Yeah,
yeah,
a garden.
Plant that seed, man. Water that lawn.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Sweet.
Well.
That's all I got.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe it's over.
I know.
So,
well,
I want to
watch the remake.
I want to get your closing thoughts on Fallout, and then I definitely want to kind of just, you know, touch upon The Prisoner as a general, and maybe we'll do some, like, favorite moments, things like that.
My overview on this episode, it was a really fun, good episode. I didn't like as the many breadcrumbs that they dropped for me just because I don't like breadcrumbs. No, I'm totally kidding. No, I didn't, you know, I felt like it was way in your face at the end of what was happening. But I did, it was a great series for me. It was it was a nice exploration. It was a good journey. And
did you gain information?
I got some freaking information.
Oh, okay, because I didn't.
Aww. Well, maybe you should go back and do it again.
Yep, for the eighth time.
Maybe one day.
Reset.
Which, by the way, I mean, here's the thing. Like, what's fun about this, if you guys are listening at home, like, you know, watch the series again. I'm glad we brought on Steph Z into this experience. It would have been one thing for Meredith and I to do it, and I'm sure we would have done
this was admirably. Fascinating to listen in someone who is completely new to it, though. I loved that. Like,
thanks,
it made it new for me again.
Right.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's part of the fun is really getting to share this experience with other people. And,
right. Infect them.
Yeah.
Just infect them with The Prisoner.
Meredith, your thoughts on The Prisoner?
Overall or this episode?
Both.
Okay, well, you know, this episode, it is what it is. You know, it's been a quick build up to a big mind screw. And I think this episode really kind of showcases a certain aspect of McGoohan. I liked it. You know, again, I never cared for the rocket scene, but I love the ending. I think it's great. I think they cover a lot. I think there's a lot of subtext. Number two scene specifically has so much subtext. If you go back and watch it a bit, you see a lot. It's a brilliant series. I you know, was first introduced to The Prisoner when I was much younger by my godparents, was fascinated, you know, as a preteen, and watched it kind of in my, like, mid-early-ish 20s, and having watched it again now with you guys, I'm like, I have a whole new appreciation for it, and I definitely have a much better understanding of what's being said, and I think it's a fascinating series that is really, like, when you think about how long it's been on air, it really stands the test of time.
Yeah. It really does, and it, you know, we couldn't have Booger today, but, you know, he said in the past on episodes he has been here, you know, he's gotten to share it with his daughter, so it really is interesting how people kind of present it and continue the legacy and what everyone finds in it. Because ultimately, you know, you could agree with it, disagree with it, but it certainly makes you think. McGowan said in an interview that of Number Six, he hasn't got it, meaning freedom. No freedom ever. It starts all over again.
That's like the one thing McGowan said on the series, about the series.
Yeah. But for me, Here's the thing that my stamp of what ultimately all kind of is. The series started in the same place with a different view, but it ends in the same place with a different perspective. And if you can do that in life, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
You're doing okay.
Yeah. You'll have a definite different perspective if you come with me on Monday. Just kidding.
Sunday.
So, you know what? Ladies and gentlemen listening to us, be good people.
Yeah.
To each other.
Be kind to one another.
To you.
To you. And just think about that choice and think about, you know, that's what I would love to do, is encourage people to think about why you believe and why you do the things you do. And are they for the right reasons? And what the right reasons are, what resonates with you, not what you've been told, heard, or seen somebody else do.
Yeah.
And for a limited time, literally, you have to, like, be listening live or tuning in right now. You can go to Vancouver with Steph Z for the Women's World Cup 2015. All you got to do is tweet at I am Steph Z. Don't miss out on your chance to go to the World Cup with Steph Z.
You have to pay your way, but you can go with Steph.
But we'll hang out.
Yeah, she'll hang out with you.
Yeah, exactly.
She'll give you high fives.
I like high fives.
They're pretty cool.
So, so if, you know, again, you're welcome to go.
Yes.
We never addressed welcome.
Yeah.
Oh, anyways, we'll come back and revisit this in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah, one day.
Super fun.
Yeah.
One day we'll have kind of a reunion thing. And you know what? It would be fun. The Six of One Society, they do the Port Marion thing on every April. So, you know, I think we'll try to get out there. We'll find a way. By hook or by crook, we'll find a way.
Hook or by crook.
So look out for us there. Don't be shy. Say hi. We don't bite. We promise.
I've never heard that. Don't be shy. Say hi.
That's so good.
I'm going to say that. I'm 100% stealing that. That was worth the whole Prisoner recap.
You've never heard this?
Never have I.
All right.
It's just so old, Phil.
Speaking of don't be shy, come say hi. You can. There's social media stuff. Just because the Prisoner podcast has ended doesn't mean your experience and our connection has to end. We can still all be communicative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Steph?
You guys can tweet me at IAMSTEFZ. Keep the conversation going. It's been really, really fun. Thank you guys so much for watching this journey and not spoiling it for me. Yeah. I appreciate that.
It's been good. You can find me on Twitter at MPLACKO. That's M Placco. I talk all things comic books and sci-fi and TV and cats and mac and cheese. So, I don't know, send me pics of macs and cheese and we can talk about that.
That's right. And this, of course, is AfterBuzz TV. There's so many TV shows that if you love TV, we've probably got an after show for it. So continue your AfterBuzz experience. And you know what? A lot of you guys continue to rate, comment, all that stuff. I've seen, you know, a couple people have asked, is there an email address where I can write something more personal? Yes, there is. It's info@AfterBuzzTV.com. We appreciate you guys because without you, we are just individuals.
Yeah, And we are.
Well, that's cool.
That is cool.
That's cool, but it's fun to be individuals in a group.
Yes. It is.
Yes, yes.
I love this. Thank you guys for having me on. This is my first AfterBuzz show, so it was super fun.
And here's all the notes.
Yeah.
And I'm done with the journey of reading 800 books a week.
Be seeing you.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
All you need is love!
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.